This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Sends that one to left. Altuve going back, watching this one. That's a slam the other way. Trent Grisham, who already has his career high in home runs this year with 28. Previous career high was 17. It's number 29, and it's a slam. And all of a sudden, it's 6-0.
You know what? I did not see that. I heard some of the coaches saying that. But I don't know if it was if the clock was running and saying like step off the pitch clock was running out, but I did not see that, so I got to go and look at it.
Okay, welcome in everybody on a Wednesday.
Ask me how I'm feeling this morning, Sean.
Yeah. How you doing, Seth? How you feeling?
Brandy wants me to apologize to you for being irrationally agitated when you asked me how I was feeling yesterday.
I really wasn't coming at you. I wasn't being passive aggressive.
No, you weren't coming at me. No. In my mind, I was going somewhere, and you kind of veered me off track, and that's when I turned into a petulant child. So I'm not feeling great this morning after yet another – look, there's – for those of you just waking up who didn't see, we had a little bit of a situation last night where Fromber may or may not have been ignoring Cesar Salazar, the catcher, and then may or may not have beamed his own catcher in the
two pitches later.
After allowing a grand slam.
Yeah.
I'll let Sean lay it all out for you.
Okay.
But this is a classic Fromber moment because none of the explanations afterwards really add up. Yeah. I've done the deep dive. If I were an attorney and I was cross examining people, none of the explanations really make sense, other than that at the base of it all, it's hard not to think that Fromber had a classic Fromber meltdown.
The intent is the big thing. So I'll do my best. Yeah. I'll do my best to lay this out because I had my fantasy draft last night, as you know, Seth. This is the league I've been in for nearly 30 years. Next year will be year 30. I'm in it with several other media members, two of whom we compete with in the mornings. Our good friends John and Lance and Adam Wexler's in there. So we had the game on, but we didn't have the sound up. So I only saw the grand slam. I didn't see all the controversy till I got back up to my apartment afterwards and saw the social media. But the grand slam that you just heard, faithful audience, Cesar Salazar appeared to want Fromber to step off the mound before he threw the pitch that resulted in the grand slam. Fromber either just didn't see it or just completely ignored him and threw a sinker right down the heart of the plate.
Yep.
And Grisham sent this thing opposite field well into the Crawford boxes.
But wait, it gets worse.
Yeah, it gets worse. Yeah, so that the game at that time was 2-0, which I know feels like an insurmountable lead these days. Well, if 2-0 feels insurmountable, boy, let me tell you what 6-0 feels like. So a couple of pitches later, Fromber throws another sinker that just it looked like it crossed up Salazar, but it beamed him right in the chest.
Yeah.
With zero remorse from Fromber over the whole thing, and Salazar taking off his mask and having a look on his face like, this fuck.
I thought he was going to charge the mound.
Dump it, Ben. I almost, yeah.
Salazar might be the first person in Major League Baseball history to get beamed by both starting pitchers in a baseball game because he got hit by pitch in this game as well. So I don't know. It's so crazy.
So this was Joe Espada This was Joe Espada.
So wait, and I think you said it. Yeah, Salazar was setting up for a curveball, had his glove way down low.
Yep.
And for anybody that asks, it's an understandable question. It's just not so easy to just, when you're expecting a curveball, to all of a sudden adjust to a 92-mile-per-hour sinker.
Correct.
So it wasn't, people have asked, like, well, why didn't he just catch it? Like, it's because it's really, really fast.
Yeah, it's coming. Exactly. It's really, really fast. So the big question is, did Fromber do this out of frustration? Did he do it intentionally? Here was Joe Espada on this sequence on the cross-up, air quotes, between the two after the game.
You know what? I think it did. It's not the first that happened. You know, that pitch comp could be an issue. But I got to talk to, you know, Sally about it because he kind of looked like he got crushed up.
Okay, now here are the other things that we need to know. And Brian McTaggart had a good summary of this whole thing in the clubhouse afterwards. Is that Fromber claims that he apologized to Salazar in the dugout after the inning was over.
Yeah.
The two were seen speaking in a very animated fashion in the clubhouse. Salazar
is still in his full gear.
Yeah.
Fromber dressed in his street clothes.
After the game.
Showered. Yeah.
Yeah. Then the two were pulled into the manager's office.
But I promise you, there's nothing to see here.
Yeah, right. It came out after Fromber, somewhere along the way, Fromber did his post-game media availability, I think before this, because he was still in his uniform.
Yeah.
And he claimed that it was not intentional, that the two got crossed up.
Well, and so this is where, nothing adds up, because he says he called for a sinker. Which, meanwhile, Fromber doesn't wear the device that allows him to call for a pitch.
Right.
So there's that.
Yeah.
And when somebody followed up and asked, like, so how'd you call for it? He says, it wasn't necessary that I called for it. It was just the pitch I had in mind. He called for a curveball, but it was already in my mind that I was going to throw a sinker.
He throws 90-something pitches in a game, and this happens to be the one where I just had this one in mind.
I feel like Salazar is trying to fall on his sword here.
Yes.
And I wouldn't criticize him if this isn't the whole truth, because I think he's trying to be, just do right by the team on this one. He says he said it was the buzz in the stadium following the grand slam made it hard to hear. He says it was a big spot for the Yankees. The stadium was loud, and I thought I pressed the button, but I pressed the wrong button, and I was expecting another pitch.
Okay.
I pressed the wrong button, and yeah, that's what it was.
Okay.
But then he also did say, heat of the moment got to us. He apologized after. Oh, okay. If you press the wrong button, you caress the wrong button. If as far as the heat of the moment part of it and Fromber apologizing, there's something that doesn't add up here.
The buzz in the stadium. You're in your home stadium. I know a lot of Yankee fans travel.
Yeah.
I get that. But the buzz in the stadium, that does not. There's several
things. And Fromber saying that he called for a sinker.
Dude, yes.
When he can't call for a sinker.
There are several things that don't line up here. If what we're trying to adjudicate is the intent of that that stray sinker that Fromber threw. Number one, Salazar is a guy who's just trying to hang on to a major league job. So he is going to fall on his sword. There's nothing Cesar Salazar is going to do. If the company line on this is it was a cross-up, Salazar is going to play nice and go along with it. Let's start there with that. Number two, Fromber does not have the benefit of the doubt on anything that involves being a child. This year.
Right. Yeah.
He is not backing up bases. He leads the league in pitch clock violations.
He's blaming defensive positioning at times. That one fly ball where he blamed the defensive positioning, it was exactly the right positioning that it should have been based on his history.
And he's got two or three more quotes just like the one Seth pointed out right there where he's blaming guys after games. And ignoring... I think he probably ignored Cesar Salazar when he said to step off the mound. I don't think it was, I didn't see him.
I didn't see the catcher
waving.
Who I was like aiming the ball at, waving his hand.
Fromber gets no benefit of the doubt on any of this stuff. None of it. It was intentional.
And credit to, it was Chandler Rome pointed this out. Because my first question was, all right, has Fromber gone off the rails and stopped consulting his sports psychologist? For whatever it's worth, Andy Nunez, the team sports psychologist, was making one of his yearly visits to the team yesterday. That's when he started. He was there yesterday. So I don't know. Maybe he tried some new form of hypnotism or something before the game that backfired. I don't know.
Or he had a look. These guys aren't hitting right now. Maybe they prioritized the hitters with him yesterday. And Fromber's like waiting in line to see him, and then the game just started. He's like, well, I guess I'll just see him tomorrow. You know?
I could see, if of all the players on the team that might use Nunez, the sports psychologist, could you also see Fromber as being the one that forms like a, like has a jealous relationship with him somehow? Like he sees Nunez talking to somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you're mine. You're mine. What are you doing? You don't talk to him.
That's right. And then Fromber's way to deal with it is he just doesn't talk to him at all before the game.
Like, what if Nunez pissed him off or
pissed him off and he snubbed him. Yeah. So what does this all mean? Well, the Astros lost last night 7-1. The big thing is you lose a game. Now, thankfully,
it was a battle of two of the best ground ball pitchers in the league. They've got the second and third highest ground ball rate in the. Fromber's got the best home run rate in the league in terms of not allowing up home runs.
Yeah.
He allowed two last night, including a grand slam.
Yeah. So those numbers didn't play out last night, at least on the Astros side of things. Thankfully, the Mariners marinered again last night. They lost. The Astros are still three games up.
Is there anything that's been frustrating you about the Astros offense? It was there in great form last night. They were just dribbling balls off of their bats. They might as well have been hitting them with tissue paper.
Dude.
The average velocity off the bat was like 90 miles per hour. They were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position.
Oh, good job. That's consistency there. Yeah.
They're going down 5 or 6. They're trying to bunt late in the game.
What was that?
Why not?
Dude.
Yeah, let's just get on the board.
What was that?
We're bunting poorly.
It's not just we're bunting. It's Jeremy Pena, who's been your best hitter all year, is bunting, and he bunts it right back to the. You may as well have hit a comebacker. Bunts it right at the pitcher. What are we doing? So they lose and it's the Yankees. So it's tough to watch the Yankees celebrating grand slams in your ballpark. And it's
you know
gross.
What? I didn't realize this. Aaron Boone hit was at the UNC game the night before this game
with
as well.
A sweater tied around his waist like some preppy. Yeah,
his Yankees fans were not happy about that. His son is a football coach, and I immediately thought, like, is there a Belichick connection here? His son was there the year before, though, as a football coach with Mack Brown.
And he kept him on the staff. Okay. Yeah. Must be a good recruiter. That's what I would guess. I could see that. Aaron Boone's got at least a lively personality. I could see that apple not falling that far from the tree.
Well, yeah, and then Aaron Boone was justifiably peeved about the strike zone last night. He was all agitated and talking to the umps between innings and everything. Yeah. There's nothing about last night that was fun for me.
No.
Text in. What am I forgetting or misremembering about any fun part of last night?
Well, these are the games where it's fun to come in and see what people were texting to Patrick and Sean last night.
Because
they're on the air while the game is going on. Let's see. This is Joe in Minnesota. I just watched the Fromber video. If I was the catcher, I would have thrown one back at him when he turned his back on me and pegged him in the back. Screw Fromber. What a child. So done with this 31-year-old toddler.
That's the whole thing. It's Fromber's body language and facial expression afterwards. He did not look like a guy who felt bad that he had just beamed his catcher in the chest.
No,
he was glaring. I thought they were going to throw hands.
He looked like a killer. He had the assassin.
He's like, that's what you get.
Yeah,
that's what you get.
That's exactly what it was.
That's what you get. Look.
Yep. That's exactly what it was. Another
like when you take something like when you punish your child and you're just like and you're like oh, nope, that's what you get. Nope.
Now, text message. Now you understand why Maldonado was so important to have on this team. Oh, a tribute to Maldi. Nice on the text page. All right. Man, a lot of text rolling in on this. We'll keep an eye on what you guys are saying about this. We got a lot to get to this morning. Nick Caserio joins us at 7:30 on the show today. So we'll talk to the Texans executive vice president and GM. Kind of preview the season, start to get ready for 2025. He made a move yesterday, move that I liked and a move that we've kind of discussed throughout the preseason. Is this how the Texans are going to handle this position moving forward? I'm not just talking about this year. I'm talking about in future years. That is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Nick Caserio joins us in a little over an hour. He'll join us at 7:30 today. One of the moves I'm sure we will ask him about was the most recent move by the Houston Texans. Texans, of course, start their season this Sunday against the Los Angeles Rams. We'll talk about that as well. Davis Mills signs a one-year, $7 million fully guaranteed extension yesterday. This is one of those tweets, Seth, where I'd ask myself, okay, is this a tweet from like a year ago getting pushed to the top of my timeline for some reason? You know, the algorithm does weird things sometimes, because he did virtually the same thing about a year ago when he extended his rookie contract 1 year for $5 million. And that's the contract he's playing under this season. This contract ties Davis Mills to the Texans through 2026. Fully guaranteed, 1 year, $7 million extension. Davis Mills was definitely a topic during training camp because he had a really good training camp. He had maybe one or two bad days out there. And other than that, Davis Mills, for the first couple weeks of training camp, he was the best quarterback out there. Now, granted, he was going against twos every day. C.J. Stroud is going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, et cetera, every day. So there's a degree of difficulty. But nevertheless, Davis Mills, and in the brief times he got into the games as well, Davis Mills looked pretty good too in the preseason games. I like this move for the Texans. I like this move for Davis Mills. If this is the life Davis Mills wants to carve out for himself, being a backup quarterback and just kind of going year by year, and just stacking $5 million and $7 million and whatever the number is each year. I'm a little surprised by this move, to be honest with you, Seth. I think if Davis Mills had just gone through this season as the backup quarterback for the Texans, even if he hadn't gotten into any games, I think he might have been able to get a bigger deal out on the open market. But I'm guessing he likes it here with this team.
I think he likes it here, but I also think that, and I'll ask Nick about this. I don't think we'll probably get a straight answer, but maybe, who knows. I wonder if there was a conversation with him, too, about like, hey, listen, you know, if a good trade situation comes up and we think that it's good for both of us, then we'll trade you. If you have a chance to be a starter and it's like, you know, I think there's a level of trust there with Davis Mills now. And obviously Davis Mills doesn't have an axe to grind with the organization. This is the second time he's re-upped.
Yeah.
That I think Davis might look at this as, well, look, you know, who knows what the future holds and what my opportunities will be. I like where I am right now, but also there might be an opportunity via trade. It doesn't have to be that C.J. Stroud gets injured or something. And that's where, and at the same time for the Texans, they can continue to develop Graham Mertz, and maybe this time next year, maybe their price. The Texans right now might think, okay, we really need Davis Mills to be our backup quarterback. Yeah. He's got experience, this, that, the other. But if somebody gives us a deal that we just can't refuse because it's too good, then we can trade him.
Mm-hmm.
You get to next year, and if they feel good about Graham Mertz, then it can become, okay, somebody offers up a fourth or fifth rounder for Davis Mills. We can trade him for a draft pick, get that money off our books. So I like it. It's kind of a good hedge for all parties involved.
Yeah. I do think it's to a degree, I mean, $7 million, so it's a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of the salary cap. But I do think that it extends the fact that it extends Davis through this year, and well, he's already extended through this year. It extends him through next year. I think that plays into something you and I had talked about within the last couple of weeks, which is, hey, if Davis had to start X amount of games, how do we think the Texans would do in those games? I think we even played the hypothetical. Let's pretend C.J. Stroud got abducted by aliens, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden Davis Mills is your starting quarterback. You know, I think Davis Mills with this defense on the other side, I think the Texans can win eight or nine games with Davis Mills as their quarterback. I think that much of the defense, and it's not that I think Davis Mills is, you know, Joe Burrow or something like that, but I think he's good enough now, you know, he's been in this system, some variation of it before in his career. He's, you know, he was in this system more than C.J. Stroud's been in this type of system, given that he played for Tim Kelly his rookie year. So I think it's validation also that they feel like, hey, if we had to get through a patch without C.J. Stroud, we feel perfectly confident that Davis Mills can navigate that patch of schedule for us.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're not extending him, you know?
If you look at Deshaun Watson in seasons 2021 through 2024,
yeah,
he has a QBR of 40.4. Davis Mills in that same time, while making drastically less money, has a QBR of 41.2.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've basically been the same guy.
Wow.
Well, Deshaun Watson has had $170 million guaranteed, just hitting his bank account bi-weekly. Weekly,
yeah.
Whatever it
might
be.
Yeah. Yeah. And for another couple of years, too.
Yeah.
Hey, he's working out diligently on videos I've seen on Instagram.
Dude, it takes a lot to stay motivated to be a fifth-string quarterback on one of the worst teams in the league while making that much money. So kudos to Deshaun for just plugging away in a blue-collar fashion. Yes.
$46 million a year. Sam Warren had a really good piece on the Chronicle yesterday on the website. About Cole Popovich. You brought this up, I think, towards the end of the show yesterday, this piece that Sam Warren wrote about Cole Popovich's journey. We'll definitely ask Nick Caserio about Cole Popovich and how he feels Cole's been doing in coaching that offensive line, because from the article, Nick was the one who placed the phone call to Cole Popovich about coming and working for the Texans. The two had history back when they were both with the New England Patriots. And for those who don't know the story, Cole Popovich, you read this article, he's a rising star in the offensive line coaching ranks. You know, he was set to be the guy to take over for Dante Scarnecchia after he retired in 2019. He and another coach, whose name escapes me, were co-offensive line coaches during the COVID year in 2020. And then in 2021, where the league required pretty much everybody to get vaccinated, Cole Popovich chose not to, and they parted ways, the Patriots and Cole Popovich. He ends up coaching at Franklin High School, which is where his son went to high school.
Yeah, his son was a freshman that year. Yeah,
in 2021. He coached at Troy University in 2022, and then 2023 is when he came over to the Texans. What impressed me most about Cole Popovich in this article, Seth, was how he threw himself into the Franklin High School job. The coach at Franklin High was expecting Cole Popovich basically just to be somebody who gave little pointers and things like that. He's on Zoom calls with coaches
every night with the players doing cutups and everything. This is one thing. I honestly, as I was reading that part of the article, it's just that's the same experience that I'm guessing D'Amico's experience was kind of like that too. Guys, they leave the NFL and they start coaching high school just maybe in their spare time or whatever. And it's a different level of commitment, you know, and the things you just expect to do automatically, they're doing it. And it's, you know, because high school coaches, mostly assistant coaches, have actual jobs, either teaching or otherwise. And they're, you know, trying to, like, where the pro guys are throwing themselves into this voluntary job like it's a full-time job. And they ended up having a lot of success that year. He's had a long, because he was like 26 years old when he got into coaching.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of bounced around a little bit in different jobs after college. He got into it, and then ultimately, on the recommendation of one of his college coaches, got hooked up with Belichick in New England.
Pat Hill at Fresno.
That's right, it was Pat Hill.
Pat Hill.
One-time Texans coaching interviewee, if I recall correctly.
He was
back in like 2006, I think.
He was David Carr's coach in college, and he was early 2000s, man, when Fresno State was pulling off all those upsets of the Big Pro. Pat Hill was a rising star in the coaching ranks back then. Well,
the Texans interviewed him the year that they ended up hiring Kubiak, if I remember correctly.
That sounds about right. Yeah. That sounds right. Hey, maybe David Carr's college coach can rehabilitate David Carr's career in 2006. What impressed me most about Cole Popovich in this article, I came away from this article feeling really good about the hands that the offensive line is in right now with the Texans, Seth. I like the two stops that he had. And again, this was a guy who, when he got cut loose from the NFL, was a rising star in the position coaching ranks. I found it cool. It didn't seem like there was any bitterness with him. The two jobs that he had that were non-NFL jobs in that interim period, Franklin High School and Troy, he walked away from both of those jobs, like using them as learning experiences. Like the high school one, he said, I learned to, he said, Dante Scarnecchia always said to separate the important from the unimportant. And that really hit home with high schoolers because you can't put too much on their plates. You know,
you've got to get some basic things.
You got to boil it down
before you start trying to do all the fancy stuff.
Yeah. So he came away with a renewed respect or a renewed internalization of that tenet of the Scarnecchia, you know, Bible. And then at Troy, he said it was cool because I learned new schemes that weren't being used in the NFL at the time that gave me a new perspective on how to look at some things that I guess have been really beneficial for him here. It was a really good article, man. I didn't know much about Cole Popovich other than just the fact that he got let go from the Patriots because of a vaccination issue. I recommend to go read it. If you're looking to feel good about how the offensive line is being coached, I came away feeling better about it after reading that article.
The biggest thing about coaching is that, especially on the line play, for me at least, just because that's where I played, you can tell whether a guy's a good coach or not just by the evidence of two things. One is the technique across the board, generally pretty sound. And two, do you see improvement in guys, the younger guys, especially from the beginning of the year to the end of the year? I feel like the technique across the board is so much better this preseason than it was last year. The footwork, the lack of miscommunications, all of those things. It's just night and day what it was before. But also, I mean, people initially, the first question, and it's a justifiable question, was, hey, wait a second. This guy was the assistant offensive line coach last year. Why is he becoming the line coach when clearly all of these things were an issue? From the very onset, I said, look, I can't judge an assistant position coach by the work of the full-time the assistant coach, because I've seen instances where there were assistant position coaches who I knew were really good coaches, but there's only so much they can do.
Yeah.
Like they're not going to override or supersede what the main assistant coach is going to do. But then the other was, I think it was DJ Bieniemy that first reported that some of the changes the Texans made in their play calling, in their run selections in the end of the year and in the playoffs were due to the input of Cole Popovich and that he had really pushed for it. And you look at that chart, you know, when they closed out the Charger game with a drive that was nothing but runs.
11 straight runs with Joe Mixon. Yeah.
That first drive in the third quarter of the Chiefs game, again, that was reportedly a lot of Cole Popovich's influence. So I think that they probably write down when they were starting to get desperate, maybe Cole Popovich or somebody else said, like, listen, man, listen, we got enough's enough. We got to fix this.
Yeah. With the that's interesting. The evidence, have you seen evidence that this offensive line is well coached by the definition you just had a couple of minutes ago?
They're completely different than what they were last year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the technique across the board and the lack of miscommunications.
Yeah.
Those are 100% better than they were last year.
Yep.
Like last year in the preseason, there were so many missed assignments and obvious confusion on the offensive line where guys just flat out didn't know what their responsibilities or assignments were.
Yep.
This year it's been the exact opposite. It's been very rare. There have been missed blocks that were just physical losses, and the physical losses are going to happen. There have been very few instances I've seen where a guy just flat out didn't know who he was supposed to block.
Yep.
Or two guys, you know, last year what we would see all the time is like a guard and a tackle both thinking that they were going to work up to the linebacker, and they would just leave a guy like DeForest Buckner completely
running
unblocked.
Straight at C.J. Stroud.
Good luck, DeForest. We're going to go hang out with your friend E.J. Speed for a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Text message. Guys, when are we talking about how Fromber drilled Salazar on purpose? We talked about it extensively in the open. We'll talk about it again in headlines.
We talked about how bogus the explanation for it was afterwards. Yes.
The stance of Payne and Pendergast is that it was intentional by Fromber.
I'm sorry. If you're asking when are we going to talk about it, we can't talk about it every single segment for 4 hours, okay?
Yeah.
Because I would stab myself in the face.
Yep.
So, but we will be talking about it frequently.
We will talk about it in headlines in the next segment for sure. Text message, Sean, Mills' contract is the second largest for NFL QB backups. I'm not sure how much more he would have gotten in the open market. I'm not sure
he would have gotten, largest per year, but if you do the – And I don't know, like, send me the link on that.
Right.
Because I'm skeptical. I think Deshaun Watson's got the largest of backup quarterbacks.
yeah, Texter, take that.
Yeah, but it's a one-year deal yeah. as opposed to a multi-year deal that he could have gotten for probably yeah. more total guaranteed money.
Yep. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm just obviously fact checking that erroneous text.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'll talk about Davis Mills in headlines. We'll also talk about Framber Valdez in headlines. Nick Caserio joins us on the show at 7:30 today. So we'll start to dig in on the season with Texans executive vice president and general manager, Nick Caserio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pain and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Sends that one to left. Altuve going back, watching this one. That's a slam the other way. Trent Grisham, who already has his career high in home runs this year with 28. Previous career high was 17. Hits number 29, and it's a slam. And all of a sudden, it's 6-0.
You know what? I did not see that. I heard some of the coaches saying that. But I don't know if it was if the clock was running and saying, like, step off. The pitch clock was running out. But I did not see that, so I got to go and look at it.
What Joe Espada is referring to, sentence there, was Cesar Salazar, the catcher for the Astros, appeared as Framber Valdez was getting ready to deliver that pitch that resulted in a grand slam. It looked like Salazar wanted Framber Valdez to step off of the mound. The Astros lose last night 7-1 to the Yankees, and the big blow in this game was the grand slam that you just heard. Looked like Salazar wanted Framber to step off the mound. Framber went ahead and pitched anyways, and the ball wound up in the Crawford boxes, and the game was essentially over at that point. Two pitches later to the next batter, Framber Valdez drilled Cesar Salazar in the chest with a sinker when Salazar was looking for a curveball. All parties afterwards said that this was just a mix-up between the two, but there appears to be plenty of evidence, at least in terms of facial expressions, body language, and maybe some of what was going on in the clubhouse afterwards, that's not the case.
The cover-up doesn't match up. This is what always happens, is they couldn't get their stories straight. So, as you mentioned, it looked like Salazar was going to rush the mound, and it looked like Framber was there for it. We were about to have a Nolan Ryan experience. Except with a team. Well, I mean, as we pointed out, Salazar becomes the first Major League Baseball player in history, I think, to get beamed by both starting pitchers because he got hit. he got hit by pitch in this game as well by Max Fried. Framber says that he called for a sinker, and credit to whoever in the Astros press pool asked Framber, how exactly did you call for a sinker when you don't have the device that allows the pitcher to call for a pitch?
Yeah.
And he said, it wasn't necessary that I called it. It was just a pitch that I had in mind.
He
called for a curveball, but I was already in mind that I was going to throw a sinker. So that's what I threw, and that's what happened.
And just coincidentally, it happened to be two pitches after the grand slam where he ignored the catcher stepping off of the mound. Yeah.
So Salazar trying to, I guess, fall on his sword here and trying to take accountability for it. Says that he pressed the wrong button, but that also it was loud. So this is where it just it all breaks down. He says he pressed the wrong button, but that also it was really loud, so you couldn't hear anything. So it was either that Framber couldn't hear or maybe he couldn't hear that he had pressed the wrong button. None of it makes any sense.
If you were at the game last night, tell us, text in, was the buzz in the building after the Grisham Grand Slam so notable and so loud that the pitcher and the catcher wouldn't have been able to hear pitch-com communication with each other?
Because this is on, so you have the Grand Slam, and then you have the next batter come up. And,
Grand Slam by the road team, by the way.
Yes,
by the
and road then team. In the second pitch of the next at-bat, somehow it's still
just
so loud.
Still buzzing,
Yeah, so Framber ignored it. In my mind, Framber ignored it, threw what he wanted to throw because he was being pissy. And like, there's nothing that anybody said afterwards would really sway me from seeing what I saw and it all making sense, especially when it's Framber, who this year has gotten his doesn't cover first, his blame defensive positioning at times. It's been kind of a old Framber type of year.
Yeah.
And to add insult to injury, my first thought was, okay, well, is he still seeing a sports psychologist? I don't know, but Nunez, the sports psychologist, was in the building yesterday. It was the first day of one of his visits that he makes to the major league ballpark.
Yeah, someone's asking, does Good Framber even exist anymore? I don't know if he exists. I don't know if this is a Darth Vader situation where you're looking, you go, well, there's good in him still. You know, if we kill off Darth Framber, then Anakin Framber comes back. Does Good Framber even exist anymore? I don't know. I don't really care. I just know that this version of Framber is a little toxic right now for this team. The version of Framber that's a little inattentive to details out there on the field, the version of Framber that points fingers and blames, the version of Framber that I think is in his bag to bean his catcher last night out of frustration. I don't think that's outside at all of the realm of possibility. I think he did it. I think that's exactly what happened.
And let's say even if he didn't intentionally do it, it was still in that environment. The very best I could say is that I would guess, all right, Framber was just losing it emotionally and he wasn't in the right frame of mind and that's why they got crossed up. It all comes back to Framber at some point.
It does.
And in a night where, man, they were all set up for a classic duel of two ground ball pitchers. Framber, for his struggles this year or whatever, he still has the lowest home run rate per inning in the league. He lets up two home runs, including a grand slam. Whereas Fried had some scary moments in this game, but by and large was exactly what Framber used to be.
Yeah.
Just an extreme ground ball, soft contact pitcher.
It was disappointing because it is two big names going against each other. You bought a ticket to that game, like Valdez and Fried, that pops. It was not that kind of game. It was, it was a game that was a lot like a lot of Astro games lately. It was kind of boring. There was no offense on the Astro side. What's disappointing about that is the last time they faced Max Fried, they shellacked Max Fried. Remember, I forget who the other ace pitcher that they faced in back-to-back series. It might have been Garrett Crochet. I think it was. Crochet and Fried on back-to-back days back in maybe July or August. It was early August. They shelled them on back-to-back days, and then there was none of that going on last night. The Astros didn't score a run until late in the game. 7-1 the final score. They're still three games up in the AL West over the Seattle Mariners.
Astros were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position, as they tend to do. But don't worry, everybody. The Astros are currently the seventh best team in terms of batting average in the league. That's why they're bunting late in this game. When they're down by...
They are putting a great case together for how meaningless batting average is these days.
Oh, I know. Every time I see how high they are in batting average, I'm like, this is why I knew when I was 7 years old that batting average was a stupid stat.
Yep.
It was just didn't make any sense at all.
Nope. As we mentioned in the previous segment, the Texans, they extend Davis Mills, backup quarterback, for another year. He's obviously under contract this year. He signs a one-year, $7 million, fully guaranteed extension to stick around as the backup quarterback next year. So some continuity in the quarterback room. There will be another quarterback contract, I would imagine, coming along at some point before the 2026 season. It'll be a whole lot bigger than this one, but a big key to have your backup quarterback position nailed down for the Texans. Texans back at practice today, getting ready for the Rams in week one. So we should get our first injury report of the year. We already know that C.J. Gardner-Johnson, according to D'Amico Ryans, will play on Sunday. He should be ready to go for Sunday. That was the big one, I think, coming out of camp.
I think because of all the focus on Matt Stafford's back, one really important injury for the Rams in this game is Alaric Jackson, their offensive tackle, because he's been dealing with blood clots all year long. And I actually talked to a couple people from the Rams yesterday, and I was like, okay, so what's really the deal with Alaric Jackson? And they don't really know. I think he's expected to play, but it's not clear just how good or effective he'll be after missing most of training camp with these blood clots.
Yeah, two of their most important guys on offense, their left tackle and their quarterback, did not have a full training camp. That's advantage Texans right there. So that's good news. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you heading into the 7 o'clock hour. Nick Caserio, Texans executive vice president and general manager, is going to join us at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. 7:30, we'll do a nice preview of the season. We'll talk to him about everything going on with the Texans as well. Nick Caserio. So circle that. Be here at 7:30 and stick around through the break. We got some good stuff coming up, including David Mulligetta. Mulligetta does not do many interviews. David Mulligetta, super agent. He's the agent for Micah Parsons, also the agent for C.J. Stroud. He was on First Take yesterday, and he was on there specifically to refute all the propaganda that Jerry Jones has been putting out there about the Micah Parsons, air quotes, negotiations. This is good stuff. So David Mulligetta providing some clarity on that. We'll have that audio for you coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.